This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson visiting Georgia Public Broadcasting in Atlanta. President Donald Trump is a rich man, but is he truly a self-made man? That's been up for debate for some time, where he got his money and how much of it came from his father, the legendary New York real estate magnate Fred Trump. Now, Donald Trump's story has been pretty consistent over the years.
It has not been easy for me. And, you know, I started off in Brooklyn. My father gave me a small loan of $1 million. I came into Manhattan and I had to pay him back, and I had to pay him back with interest.
But according to a recent investigation by the New York Times, Mr. Trump was a millionaire by the age of 8, thanks to his father's money. Over the years, Donald Trump received the equivalent of what would be more than $400 million today. What do we now know about how the president got his wealth? How does this report from the Times affect his image as being a self-made billionaire? And for that matter, what difference does it make? I mean, Donald Trump's the president now. He won partly on a platform of putting his business smarts to work for the nation. How much of an impact will these revelations really have?
Support for NPR and the following message come from Hinge. Hinge is the dating app that's great at one thing, setting you up on great dates. And they're not just saying that. On Hinge, 3 out of 4 first dates lead to second dates. They are the number one mobile first dating app mentioned in the New York Times wedding section. So if you're looking for a BFF, a job, a pen pal, or a hookup, Hinge isn't the place for you. Hinge is exclusively designed to get you out on great dates. Download Hinge in the Apple Store or Google Play.
Election Day is just a few weeks away, and some are saying it could be a year of the woman. We're talking to Democrat Stacey Abrams and Republican Elizabeth Heng, two women trying to excite their parties in 2018. That's next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Joining us from NPR in New York are Suzanne Craig and Russ Buettner, two investigative reporters for the New York Times. They worked on this report with their colleague David Barstow. Suzanne, Russ, welcome to 1A.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Thanks.
Suzanne Craig, let me start with you. How did this report come about? I assume it was kind of a natural outgrowth of the Times' previous reporting about Donald Trump after he declared himself to be a candidate.
It was. We, in late 2016, I was mailed 3 pages of Donald Trump's 1995 tax returns. And all of this reporting has sort of been, in one way or another, you know, just an outgrowth of our study of his taxes. And those taxes in particular showed something very interesting, which was in that year Donald Trump had a loss of almost $1 billion. It was a huge number, and it essentially gave him a bit of a gift card from the IRS that would have allowed him to shelter almost $1 billion going forward. And we learned then, 6 months later, we thought, you know, these losses were so huge. And then in March 2017, 3 more pages of his tax returns are found, released on the Rachel Maddow show, and they show that he made $150 million that year. This was for 2005. And this thing started with a simple question, which is, how did we get from this loss to this profit in 2005? And we just started to ask questions around that and pull string. And we quickly realized after that much of it came from a sale of his father's real estate in 2004. His father, Fred Trump, the real estate developer, had died in 1999. And we just started to pull and pull and pull, and we realized, as we did and the reporting went on, just the great fortune that Donald Trump inherited, not just in 2004 from his father after his death, but throughout his life, year by year, dollar by dollar, loan by loan.
Russ Buettner, can you give us a sense of how you reported this out? I know you've gotten a number of documents from a number of sources. Tax returns are not a document that presidential candidates or anyone really is required to release to the public. How did you go about figuring out the provenance of these documents, whether they were legit, what you should release? I mean, this is pretty sensitive stuff.
It is. You're right. And we started, as Sue said, with that sort of basic question. So there's a process you go through in these things. We gathered up all the public records that we could, 60 years of Fred Trump's deeds and mortgages and court records. Donald Trump's sister was then a federal judge, or had been for a number of years. She filed disclosure forms every year that helped us lay out sort of a roadmap for the different streams of wealth that were flowing to them. And then we began to try to find people who had been in and around Fred Trump's empire over the decades and develop sort of a network of sources that could provide us more insider documents. And we, of course, when you receive those kinds of things, you have to be careful that you know the person that has them had a reason to have them legally and authentically. And we've never had any doubt about that. Then from that sort of pile of documents, a couple hundred tax returns from his various business entities, general ledgers, financial statements, we were able to collate all that into a pretty cohesive picture of the scope and the magnitude of this vast and highly profitable empire.
All right, let's start to get into some of the details of that picture, starting with the loan that Donald Trump says he got from his father, Fred Trump. The president, the now president, maintains it was just a $1 million loan that he had to pay back with interest, and basically that $1 million, the implication is, that $1 million was the genesis for a fortune that Donald Trump built himself. Suzanne, is that true?
It's possible. In there, he did get a $1 million loan and probably paid it back with interest. But we found more than $60 million just in loans that Fred Trump over the years gave to his son. Many of these loans weren't repaid. Many of them had low interest. Embedded in there is a $1 million loan, but there's a lot of $1 million loans in there.
So it's not true that the only loan he got was that $1 million.
No, it's a lie.
I should also note, by the way, when we're talking about the money that's involved in this report, and Russ, correct me if I'm wrong, we have to be careful, and I'll try to be careful with it myself this hour, in terms of the way we discuss the money. There are places in the report where you talk about the real value of what was spent or bought or sold, and then the value in today's dollars. Is that right? So the $1 million we're talking about $1 million then at the time, not the equivalent in 2018 dollars of $1 million. Is that right?
Well, I think what you're talking about is that's how Donald Trump describes it, is he received $1 million at some point in time that he's never really narrowed down. You're right. We did, when we were talking about the money he received, we tried to talk about that cohesively or coherently, like in current dollars, so it wouldn't be confusing. For instance, he's receiving $20,000 a year from the time he's 3 years old. Today, that doesn't sound like a lot, but in 1949, when that started, it was the equivalent of a physician's salary. Today, that's the equivalent of $200,000 a year. So when we address those things, we try to talk about them in current dollars, just to make it clear and easy to understand.
But with the loans, that's actual loans that were valued at that time at $1 million. It would be more than $100 some million today if we look at the loans. The $60 million that we found, the $61 million, is actual at the time money.
We should note that both the president and his staff have pushed back on this report. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders was asked about it at the White House press briefing earlier this month. Here's what she said.
The president's lawyer addressed some of the specific claims and walked through how the allegations of fraud and tax evasion are 100% false and highly defamatory. There was no fraud or tax evasion by anyone. He went on much further, and I would encourage you to read every word of his statement, which completely undercuts the accusations made by the New York Times.
That was Press Secretary Sarah Sanders speaking earlier this month. We have that statement on our website, the1a.org. Also, in response to this investigative report, the president tweeted the following, quote, "The failing New York Times did something I have never seen done before. They used the concept of time value of money, in doing a very old, boring, and often told hit piece on me. Added up, this means that 97% of their stories on me are bad, never recovered from bad election call," unquote. Let's break this into two parts. We'll get to the time value of money thing in a second. But first of all, Russ, what do you make of the White House's responses to your report?
Not a lot, I suppose. They make this sort of sweeping accusation that there are factual issues or that the factual underpinnings of this is incorrect. We laid out all the facts and all the explanation of the source documents to all of this very clearly, and there wasn't a single instance where they raised a specific problem. It sounds like they just don't like it and want to dismiss it.
And Suzanne, this term that they use, time value of money, I've never heard that term before. What is that, time value of money?
I was going to say, I'm going to let Russ take that because I'm not even really
okay.
sure what he's talking about.
Go ahead, Russ.
I think what they're talking about there is inflation-adjusted dollars. And to say he's never seen it done before, I think he would have had been living in a cave to have never seen that done before. It's, in fact, done every day for the reasons I described a couple of moments ago, that a dollar in 1950 is not the same as a dollar today. And so you typically adjust those things to make it clear and meaningful.
Let me get to one comment. Charisma Kings tweeted, with respect to taxes, tax avoidance is not a crime. Tax evasion is. Folks who are involved in criminal ventures evade taxes. High earners like Trump avoid them and do so with the help of high-priced accountants. Blame the system, not Trump. Suzanne, what do you make of that tweet?
It's the story looks at both the tax avoidance that went on throughout the years with the inherited wealth that Donald Trump got, but it also shows very clearly that there was a lot more than tax avoidance going on. Donald Trump stepped over the line into illegality. And we outline a number of schemes in the story using, you know, documents both that we got from various sources, including Fred Trump and his empire, to show that that much of what went on and how he inherited his fortune was done through illegal means.
Suzanne, I wonder how your reporting turned out in terms of how much money it appears the Trumps should have paid in taxes but didn't. Do we have a sense of what the difference was between those two?
I mean, it comes into the hundreds of millions of dollars range. I mean, they did pay some tax on the schemes that we found, and the IRS pushed back on some of the things that they submitted that didn't add up to them. But ultimately, we felt that there was hundreds of millions of dollars that should have been paid to various tax authorities that weren't.
Suzanne, one of the aspects that comes up in the investigation has to do with valuations. I mean, when Fred Trump's children took over his empire, they valued it at a little over $41 million, all the buildings and all the businesses that they had in the various kind of larger Trump family organization. When they sold the businesses off over the next decade, they sold for 16 times more than the valuation. Can you give us a sense, Suzanne, of how valuations, kind of what you say something is worth, factors into all of this?
Valuations became a theme quickly in our reporting once we got into the documents. And we saw sort of writ large when it benefited the Trumps to put a low valuation on buildings when they didn't want to pay taxes on it, they would do that and go to great lengths to put values that just seemed ridiculous to us. Low buildings worth, you know, 100 million plus would get valuations of, you know, 5-10 million. But on the same hand, when they had a charitable donation where they were a high valuation would benefit them, they went high. So when it benefited them to go high, they went high. When it benefited them to go low, we saw them go very low.
And of course, if you inaccurately state the value of something to the IRS, then that compromises the amount of tax that the IRS may or may not be able to assess on that. But Russ, I wonder if you could respond to a tweet from Matthew, who asks, how common are the various tax dodges committed by the Trump family? That also goes with another comment from Bryce. Several of you have been asking whether this is kind of unique to the Trumps. Bryce wrote on our Facebook page, I would like to know how common this sort of tax dodging inheritance scheme is among the very rich. After the Panama and Paradise Papers, I just assume everyone rich is engaged in a lifelong struggle to subvert the law in order to get richer. Russ?
those are very good questions. Some of the things that we're talking about here that we uncovered are trust arrangements that the IRS has endorsed, sometimes after being pushed by trust and estate attorneys. And that are widely used. One of them, this grantor-retained annuity trust, which is the formal name for the mechanism through which Donald Trump and his siblings took ownership of their father's empire in the 90s. There's actually a commercial. BDO, the consulting firm, runs a commercial where a daughter is trying to persuade her father to pass on the family winery through one of these trusts. So they are quite common. Then there are other aspects of things that we uncovered that are not common at all and are not endorsed. They set up a corporation that served no purpose other than pad invoices so Donald Trump and his siblings could start taking some of their father's profits. That's not anything that's endorsed by the IRS. That's patently fraudulent on its face. And so those kind of things aren't a gray area, and they're not widely used. So it's a mix of things that we're talking about here. And even in the cases where they used mechanisms like the trust that are well-established and widely used by wealthy people, the Trumps really pushed the limits, the boundaries of those things in ways that trust and estate attorneys that we consulted with and examined these things said were beyond the pale of anything they had seen in their careers.
Before we get into more of the details, I'd like to get to one more comment that was sent in through voicemail from one of our listeners who is struggling with the idea that the Trumps actually did anything wrong. Here's what Jeff left in our inbox.
This is Jeff from St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. Many, many successful people have received benefits from their father. I see this as a non-story. The second part is taxes avoided. That is a legal method of reducing your tax bill through existing statute. Taxes evaded, now that would be interesting. But so far, all I hear is that he used certain mechanisms to avoid paying taxes, as we all do. We all take a deduction, standard or otherwise.
Jeff, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. Suzanne, what would you say to Jeff?
At the top, I mean, these aren't standard deductions. One of the things that we wrote about that Russ mentioned was a company that was set up. It's interesting because it's true that the rich do a lot of things to avoid taxes. The Trumps crossed the line into illegality. And one of the companies that we wrote about is a company called All County Building Supply. It was set up in 1992. Its sole purpose was to defraud the IRS to avoid taxes. What it was a fairly simple mechanism, and I'll explain it, and I think reader or your listeners can kind of come to their to a conclusion on it. Fred Trump in the early 1990s was getting old. He had a ton of buildings. He had a lot of cash. And the Trump siblings were looking at a situation, if Fred Trump died, where they would have to pay at the time, it would have been a 55% estate tax on all the cash that his buildings were sitting on. We're talking tens and tens of millions of dollars. So what they did was, for years, Fred Trump, he would go out and he would buy supplies for his buildings. You know, we're talking boilers, paint, everything, boilers, paint supplies, fridges, stoves, all those sort of things. And then one day, instead of him buying it, All County starts buying all of this stuff. All County is owned by Donald Trump and his siblings and another family member. And All County starts paying for all this stuff. They'll pay, let's say, $300 for an air conditioner. The company All County then created a padded receipt and would bill Fred Trump $500 for the same air conditioner. The $200 in profit was divided between the siblings. And then there's another step. So they start, they drain cash. They drained, we saw millions and millions of dollars from Fred Trump's empire, money that they no longer had to pay the estate tax on. Then they turn around and they take those receipts and they submit them to various government entities to justify rent increases on tenants who are living in their rent-regulated buildings. It was an insidious downside of this scheme. So they not only were draining the money to avoid paying tax, they then hit their tenants with it. That's illegal.
So, Suzanne, I want to just try to re-articulate this to make sure I've got it straight in my head. So you've got these buildings, these rental buildings that the Trump family owns. Fred Trump buys things for the buildings, like boilers and air conditioners or whatever. And those go into the buildings, but the All County, this company from the Trump children, creates invoices that say, well, this thing that you bought that cost $300 actually costs $500, and there's this $200 gap. So that allowed for a way of claiming that these items cost more than Fred Trump spent. And the difference in that is where things begin to get funky for tax purposes. Is that it?
That's it. And they would profit the difference, everything. You know, sometimes the markup would be $5,000 if it was a boiler. We saw markups anywhere from 20 to 50%. So over and over and over again, items were bought for Fred Trump's building. All County would pay the vendors. They would create a padded receipt over and over and over, send it up to Fred Trump's buildings, and he would overpay for it. And that allowed them to drain millions of dollars of cash from his empire.
What did tenants say about this?
Well, tenants are a lot. Most tenants were not happy about it. They were aware that when they started doing this, their rents started increasing significantly, but they didn't know why. Now, some of that was legitimate. If you put a boiler into a building, a rent-regulated building in New York City, you are allowed to raise the rent by some certain amount. But they were getting rather extraordinary rent increases, and we're in the process now of talking to some of the tenants of the buildings about how much their rents are still artificially increased by the actions that Donald Trump and his siblings took in the 1990s.
It is worth noting, Russ, by the way, there's a reference early in the investigation that news organizations, including the New York Times, are a little bit complicit in helping Donald Trump build this image. I mean, a number of reporters have said, not just the Times, but a number of reporters have come forward in the last, well, I guess since Donald Trump became president, and said, shame on me for being so credulous about this image of his wealth.
Yeah, it's been a problem for a long time. I think part of that is the way our sort of celebrity culture works in this country. You know, Donald Trump came up through, became a public figure through sort of celebrity life, not as a public figure that was engaged in government or politics. And so he wasn't always taken very seriously. It was more like this novelty spectacle that he created. And it began in the 1970s. We mentioned an article that was prominently featured in the New York Times and quite lengthy, and one of the first real profiles of Donald Trump on his own, where he took a reporter on a tour of what he called his projects, things he suggested he had built and he owned. And they were all, through the many boroughs of New York City, things that his father owned and things that his father had built. And it was through that, like originally appropriating his father's wealth, pretending that it was his own, that he first landed on the Forbes list of the most wealthy Americans. And once he was there, the sort of the die was cast. Those lies got repeated over and over and over again and weaved their way into the fabric of our culture and what people thought of Donald Trump and, you know, eventually were amplified on The Apprentice. If you watch that opening sequence of The Apprentice, which first aired in 2004, it is just a brilliant one-minute marketing campaign for what appears to be a titan of business, a self-made billionaire. And Donald Trump was never any of that.
It's kind of like the beginning of a Donald Trump infomercial in a way.
It really is. It really is. And I think in the minds of millions of Americans who saw him for the first time in the course of that show, other than, you know, articles about his various marriages, that really really set the cast for how they would view him and how they would remember him as he began to increasingly partake in public affairs.
How, Suzanne, did Fred Trump feel about this image that Donald Trump was cultivating? The way that your article is written, it kind of suggests that Fred Trump was not only okay with this image, even by playing fast and loose with tax laws, he was in on it. He supported it.
We find very much when we started the reporting that Donald received very little, if any, pushback from his father. There's times where he's quoted in articles, you know, saying that, you know, Donald's more brilliant than I am, and these things go on. And Fred, we never see points where he really pushed back publicly. But there is one interesting moment in the story. It becomes, I think, a really important inflection point between a father and a son, and that's after, you know, decades of Fred Trump both giving his son Donald money year in and year out in loans and increasing those loans and money flow as Donald got into trouble. In 1990, Fred Trump is you know, at the final years of his life.
Right.
And the pushback came rather privately, but Donald Trump had one of his lawyers in late 1990, and this is a point of great financial distress in Donald Trump's life. He had a lawyer draft a codicil to his father's will, essentially a new will. And that will, that codicil was presented to Fred Trump without Donald being there, but by lawyers. And Fred Trump, you know, he flipped out. He saw it as a way for his son. He felt his son was trying to gain control of all of his empire and potentially put it at risk. So while you don't see a public pushback by Fred, in fact, you see you see a loving father there at every
right,
moment.
Right.
In that private moment, you saw a very big pushback of what Donald Trump was doing.
More to discuss with Suzanne Craig and Russ Buettner of the New York Times. We'll get into more of the details of the report and also consider what impact this report might have, if any. Stay close.
This episode is sponsored by CuriosityStream. If you love documentaries, then CuriosityStream will be your new happy place. From the founder of the Discovery Channel, finally a streaming service for nerds, where you can binge-watch shows on science, history, nature, and more. With over 2,000 films and series and apps on most devices, there's truly something for everyone. Try it for 30 days free at curiositystream.com/NPR and enter promo code NPR.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
What about the IRS's role in all of this? Isn't it their job to catch the Fred Trumps of the world doing what Fred Trump did? How do they reflect on this?
It is their job, and it's an interesting theme throughout the story when we started to look at the different schemes. And I think one thing to remember about the IRS is, writ large, they're understaffed, and often a lot of stuff does get through. And I think that sort of became apparent to us as we were sort of looking at the totality of the tax shenanigans that we saw. We do see in some of the things that we found that the IRS did push back. And, from talking to the tax experts that we did, you understand when the IRS does see something, there's back and forth with, and it would have been in this case the Trumps, but with the people where problems are found. And eventually they come to a settlement. And we saw that additional tax and certain things was paid when they saw valuations that they too agreed were low. And then the case is settled and things move on. In the case of All County, we found no evidence that the IRS, All County is the company where they were padding the invoices in order to drain Fred Trump's empire. And in cases like that, we saw no evidence that they were aware of what the Trumps were doing there. So it's sort of a mix of they caught some stuff and they pushed back and extra tax was paid here and there, and then other cases where we're not convinced they even knew what was going on.
Now that your report has come out, Russ, have we heard anything more from the IRS? Do they plan to look into any of these allegations, or is it too late? Are there statutes of limitations that are involved?
There are statutes of limitations on any potential criminal charges. Those have since told. If there's fraud involved, there's not a statute of limitations on civil penalties and collection of back taxes. We haven't heard anything from the IRS. We wouldn't necessarily expect to. They generally run very silent, and most people who work at the IRS are forbidden by law from talking about any individual taxpayer. We have heard from New York City and New York State taxation authorities who say, based on the reporting that we did, they have open investigations and are looking for ways or if there's a reason to collect back taxes with penalties.
Benjamin has a clarifying question about All County Building supply and maintenance. Benjamin tweeted, "Did All County Building have to pay taxes on the income it made? How much of a difference is the percentage from the estate tax?" Suzanne, what would you say to Benjamin?
It's a good question. The estate tax that they were looking at would have been 55%, and All County, the partners in All County, Donald Trump and his siblings, would have had to pay some tax. It would have been a business tax. And it would have been substantially less. And it's interesting, at least in the case of the president, we know because of the losses that he had incurred throughout his life that he maybe potentially would have been able to shelter the income and not paid tax on it. Because in America, when you have losses, you're allowed to use those losses to offset future income. So we just don't know exactly what each of them paid, but it would have been substantially less than the 55% estate tax that they were facing.
Part of the story also, one of the other aspects of this that kind of stands out is how Fred Trump went to some pretty great lengths to bail out Donald Trump repeatedly if he ran into financial trouble. Russ, there was one story that involves millions of dollars of poker chips at one of Donald Trump's failed casinos. Can you explain that to us?
Sure. That was in 1990, Donald Trump was really in his darkest moment. He was facing a payment on a bond, basically a money he owed to lenders, and he couldn't make it from the revenue of the casinos. His father's lawyer showed up with checks totaling $3.5 million, bought some gambling chips, took the chips back out to the limousine and went back to Queens with them and never cashed them. So that was eventually determined to be an illegal loan that Fred Trump had given his son to help him make that payment and get over that hump.
I wonder if we also should be clear here. I mean, even if officials in New York or the IRS had known all of these things about the Trump family, Suzanne, and had decided, you know what, let's go after them. Let's rain down the full force of the law on the Trumps and make an example of them. How much could they have really done? I mean, what's the worst case scenario that Fred Trump and the Trumps might have faced at the time if they had been caught and fully prosecuted?
Well, a big one is they would have had to have paid taxes on all the money. But there could have been civil fines. There potentially could have been criminality. I mean, we talked about one area with Al County where, you know, they used these padded receipts that they came up with to drain the empire. They then passed those costs on to the tenants, and in doing so, you know, they did it with inflated receipts, and they shouldn't have done it. That potentially you could go into areas of wire fraud, among other areas, and that. So there's a range of things, and now you could be looking at not only having to they're facing potential not only back taxes but penalties and interest on the money that's owed. So there's a lot of things that I think various taxing authorities and other authorities could be looking at this.
Could they have ended up in federal prison for this?
Federal or state prison, it depends on who would choose to prosecute it. The clearest legal violation that could go into a crime was what Sue was describing with All County. They were filing false documents with a state agency, and there would be lower level charges that would flow to that. And yes, those could be, we talked to several former prosecutors who said that looks like something that could have clearly been prosecuted as a state crime.
Clearly, some of our listeners, some of you feel that this is not as big a story as some of our other listeners feel it is. Charlie wrote on our Facebook page, "Sounds like President Trump is more brilliant than we ever thought." And Freedom NJ tweeted, "So you prove that Donald Trump's success did start with a loan from his father, as he stated. Where exactly is the discrepancy?" None. Suzanne?
Is there interesting comments? I think one thing that when we started out, Donald Trump has stated that he started with a $1 million loan and he built it into a $1 billion empire. He's now in the White House, and he ran a campaign based on being sort of a self-made billionaire. There's no evidence necessarily that he is a billionaire, but what we showed is that he inherited hundreds of millions of dollars over his lifetime from his father, and some of that was done through tax fraud. People may or may not care about that, but I think it's an important narrative of somebody now in the White House about how he got his fortune and where the money came from. It doesn't necessarily say he didn't get revenue or money from other areas. You know, there's been stories that some of it has come from Russia, but what we showed is that much more of it came from his father over his lifetime, and that he was willing to cross the line to shelter it from having to pay taxes. I think that's an important chapter in the president's life that, you know, people can digest it the way they want it, but it's important, at least to us, that those facts and that truth is out there.
There's also like a secondary aspect to that as well. He's always portrayed his father as too much of a small timer to have any money that would be even of interest to him. Yeah. And what we've seen, clearly Sue described, the rewriting of his father's will in 1990 and these various schemes that Donald Trump engineered in the 90s when he was like at a low point, is that not only was his father of incredible wealth. His father paid himself $50 million in 1990 when Donald Trump was flat broke. But Donald Trump cared very much about getting as much of that wealth that he could. He went beyond the bounds of the law in several instances to try to claw as much of it as he could. And all the time that he was doing this over the decades, he was hiding it from public view very aggressively. And that really does kind of, if you're interested in Donald Trump's real life story, rewrite that story.
I mean, it's not the story that you're going to read in The Art of the Deal, where, you know, everything that Donald Trump got was got, you know, by his own hard work and shoe leather, you know, business smarts and all that. It's a story we found that's about a young boy from the time he was very young who got millions of dollars every year from his father, and really every bet that he made, Fred Trump had it covered.
Let's get in a few more of your questions before our time is up. Julia in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, has a question about Donald Trump's relationship with his children, Donald Jr., Eric, Ivanka, Tiffany, Barron. Here's the comment that Julia left in our inbox.
The investigation showed how Donald Trump's father moved money to his children to avoid paying estate taxes. My question is Donald Trump doing the same with his own children?
Julia, thanks for the question submitted through our app 1A Vox Pop. Russ, what would you say to Julia?
I think Julia has an excellent question. It's not something that we've looked into so far at this point. We do know that Donald Trump has done favors for his children. He's sold them apartments at well below market rate, which is a means of transferring wealth. But they also work directly for him. And that opens the door to a potential way to transfer wealth without having to do some of these things, because you can just pay them an extraordinary salary that maybe they wouldn't earn anywhere else in the world for the work that they're doing as a way to sort of get your money into their hands.
And the laws have also changed, you know, in recent years that makes it easier to transfer much more wealth without having to pay estate tax. And so that also, I think, factors into exactly what he can transfer and how much tax will be paid on it. It's easier now to transfer wealth generationally by paying less tax.
We should also be clear on what Donald Trump did actually build. Becky tweeted, "Trump supporters praise his business and leadership experience. Is any of that praise really earned? I know he's had bankruptcies to his name and a huge head start from dad. Has he ever really made any wealth? Was any of it honest?"
Well, I think it would be really hard to come to a conclusion. He's never had anything that's been financially successful. He has had a lot of businesses that have lost money, but certainly there are some in there that have made money. 40 Wall Street's the one office building that he owns on his own. It seems to have made some money for him, but a lot of his enterprises either lose money or are just breaking even and creating tax write-offs for him. It's an open question as to how much his enterprise, the things he built himself, are kicking off. And one has to wonder if that's part of the reason that he's refused to release his tax returns, that it might show that he's not as successful as a businessman, aside from being a personality, as he said that he is.
Nicholas tweeted, "What is really going to come from this? It's hard not to be cynical anymore, but unless criminal charges can be brought against him and his family, what really changes? Detractors will yell impeachment. Followers will say he's a smart businessman. Status quo remains." Suzanne, what would you say to Nicholas? What is going to come from this?
I think it's too early to say in terms of the investigations. Both the city, New York City and New York State, are looking at the allegations that were raised and the IRS maybe. I think those are too early days to conclude what's going to happen, and we're going to be following those. But I think on a larger level, I think that this begins to reset the narrative of Donald Trump and where his fortune, where he got his fortune. And we now understand that much more of it came from his father than is previously known, huge amount more than was previously known, and that tax fraud was involved in him being able to get more than he might have. You know, that's going to, you know, I think take a while to seep into the bloodstream of the country and voters, as, you know, but I think over time it'll affect, you know, how his story is written going forward. That's important to me as a reporter and somebody who values the facts and that things are set straight. So I think that's one thing that, you know, I think will happen over time.
And Russ, what about you before we have to go? Your team spent more than a year and a half working on this, 100,000 documents. What do you hope will come of this before we go?
I don't know that we hope for any particular outcome. Our goal is generally just to set the record straight. I think Donald Trump...
You must hope for something. I'm sure you hope that people don't just read this and go, "Oh, okay, thanks."
No, you're absolutely right. I think we hope that curious people will have some of the questions they've had about Donald Trump answered, that when he says he was never really scrutinized as a public official until a couple of years ago. And this is just part of that process to really tell America something about this person who emerged very rapidly into a very high office. Really, what is the truth about the life that he led and how he became a public figure and how he attained the success that he has?
Russ Buettner and Suzanne Craig, investigative reporters for The New York Times. Suzanne, Russ, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today's program was produced by Amanda Williams. To learn more about her and the rest of our staff, you can visit theoneA.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow for the Friday News Roundup. This is 1A.